Hey, everybody. It's me from an undisclosed location. Just another room in the house. Bob Saget's here for you. That's what this is. I have a guest that's an old friend, and I'm excited about it. And what do I have to do? I have to do business. But I got Jamie Kennedy coming on, and we have a lot to talk about, and there won't be time because he's on a press junket because he's got a movie coming out Friday, March 19th called Last Call. And it is set where he grew up in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania. And I'm from around there. So I'm sure we'll be talking about that in just a second when I let him in to the room. I'm just sending you guys the best. I hope you're doing okay as we get through this, these ripplings that'll get us into what I believe will be normalcy this year and sooner than later, so we can all have a life again. And wishing you all good thoughts with all the horrible stuff that's gone on. I hope you're well, and my heart goes out for real, not bullshit, to people that have been affected, people that have lost people. And just sending a lot of love to you guys that are listening, and I appreciate the feedback. I've been getting really nice feedback on this podcast, and I just appreciate it. And you do the normal thing with this thing. You rate, review, subscribe, or follow, depending on where you get it, on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Swatcher, Twitcher. This is a really special episode with a special friend that I haven't gotten to talk to in a long time. We text every year on birthdays. Here comes Jamie Kennedy. Jamie, this is so long overdue. Holy shit. How are you?
I know. How are you, man?
We were last time we kept talking about, you kept saying, we'll have Martoonies. We'll go out and have Martoonies. And then and then the pandemic. You can't hear something getting shaken in a shaker, you know, unless you're at some fun party where you end up getting something.
You can't be going and shaking at parties.
No, you can't be shaking. They can't have ice on the fingertips.
It's illegal now.
Frozen fingerprints, then you're unrecognizable. How the hell are you? I'm so happy. This is like great because I do a podcast and you, are you still doing yours?
Yeah, dude, I've been doing this pod. I mean,
you got a few episodes in, right?
About 28.
Oh, geez, God. You got to update your website.
Yeah, I know.
I did the usual, research. Research of someone I've known forever. Let me research a friend I haven't talked to in too long.
Yeah, but it's, one of the things about the pandemic is it's making me, I think it's forcing us to pivot. You know, I like creating my own stuff, you know, so.
You always have.
Yeah. So it's been a good thing to be able to do that. And, you know, I'm loving it, you know.
I am too, in a weird way. It's strange because it made me want to connect more with people, especially people I care about. And then they said, Jamie Kennedy's got a new movie coming out. And I said, oh, God, I wanted Jamie Kennedy. I'm like 80 plus episodes in or something. And we're newbies, you know. I talked to Bill Burr, who was one of my early guests, and he was like, you don't know anything. First thing, you got to get sponsors, then they check your downloads, you got to get over 60,000, and then, you know, he just yelled at me.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. You want to talk to who you want to talk to, and you want to and connect, and I think that's one of the things that I've been learning through this whole thing. It's like, you know, how am I going to use my time? Do I really want to fly to Lansing and have a layover for 2 hours?
With half an audience in most places.
Yeah, it's true.
That's going to change. And, you know, even though they're trying to strike the fear of God in us, which is just to get the vaccine, then they're telling us, you know, oh, it's going to come back and it won't work with these new mutations. I'm a mutation anyway, so I think the vaccine, after I get the vaccine, it'll be scared of me. But
yeah,
Oh God. So wow. So we haven't caught up, and I'm really, really happy to. This is
I miss you, man. I don't know how long it's been. We hit years. Each other with birthday texts.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we say, let's get together. And then we both get busy. You're always busy.
Well, you are too.
Yeah.
Double busy. I was you know, shooting this movie before and was on the road. And
the Last Call, right?
Yeah.
And that comes out Friday, because today is Monday, and Friday is when this comes out. And I watched it last night, and it's really nice. It's nice. It's Jeremy Piven's character has gone back to basically your old home.
upper Darby, Upper Dumps, dude.
Was it all shot there?
That's so funny. No, some of it was, but you know where most of it was shot? Newark. Newark. We made Newark look like Upper Darby.
That's good. I mean, it wasn't Trenton.
No. I pushed for Camden. But
Camden's awesome, you know. And Trenton has a thing over their bridge that says Trenton makes, the world takes.
Yeah.
That's Camden's like my
good. If you want to get stabbed, yeah, Trenton, you don't have rust on the screwdriver. Camden, there's still some rust, right?
Yeah. And some of the ERs have antibiotics now.
But it's somebody who, you know, I know and who I look up to. You came from the same area I did, so you understand what this movie is. And it's, you know, Jeremy plays a guy who goes out, does good in the world, and then he comes back, and it's a matter of selling out his local bar and for gentrification. And it's a, you know, nice feel-good story, and it's got a great cast with Jeremy and, you know, Jack Gallagher, who's this great actor, and many things like The Shield, and Bruce Dern and Taryn Manning and Kathy Moriarty and Zach McGowan. So it was cool. It was a cool like 4-week experience. We're all like summer camped in, you know.
And what I loved about it, well, they did do this. So they shot stuff. They didn't actually take you to Upper Darby for any of the stuff.
No, we did do that. We did shoot some stuff in Delco, but you know, a lot of indoors was in Newark. Beautiful downtown. Newark, it did get really nice, by the way.
Well, they got an FBI there, significant one. That's all I care about. Do they have an FBI?
They have an FBI and a Whole Foods.
That's all you need.
So, yeah,
a couple mini marts, you're good to go. But it was, you're really, you know, what I had known since the moment before I met you, I'd already known stuff you'd done from Four Kings and Three Kings. Sorry.
Three. Thank you.
Yeah. I had a king. It's like Ben Folds Five, you know.
I love you in Four Kings.
I love you in the Six Kings.
I love you. I love you in the Jamie Kennedy excrement.
Well, we have a lot to talk about. I mean, we do. So when we're done with this, it'll spill over onto your podcast when I do yours. So
I love that.
And not a moment too soon. So I'll just finish with this because it's nice. You know, you're able to promote something that's coming out in 4 days from when we're talking. So it's really about a guy, and I've done this where I've gone home. Have you gone back to Upper Darby and seen all your people?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. People ask me how I feel about Philly. And, you know, I know you and I have a lot of similar sensibilities. And you're one of the first people I saw that, you know, quote unquote, got out. And then I saw it on HBO, you know, and I was like, oh my God, he's from here. The other one was a guy named Bill Cosby. And I was like, oh my God. And
our paths went differently.
A little bit. But the thing is that I was on MMR the other day, like, you know, like you always do. And we were talking about it. I have such an appreciation for Philly now more than ever.
Me too.
Incredible, right?
Right. And I grew up kind of in Norfolk, Virginia, but then I went back to Philly to graduate Abington and then went to Temple University. But I worked at Cedarbrook Mall in the deli at Pantry Pride as a deli clerk for 5 years. I had no life.
Wow. Pantry Pride. How many people know what that is?
My dad was it used to be Food Fair, and my dad was an executive in meat for 50 years with him.
Your dad, executive in meat. Say that twice.
Yep.
What's your dad do?
What's your dad into? Meat. My dad loves meat. He sells it. He eats it. He rubs it on his chest.
Yeah, I was going to say. But so, it's like, with going back there, Philly has changed so much. And before, I think if you would get out of Philly, they'd be like, who are you to leave us? And that's kind of what the movie addresses. But now they're like really proud. They're proud of their own that have gone into the world and sprouted.
It's Philly proud. And it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it, mm-hmm. and we saw it actually. I hate talking politics because it's enough. It's been living rent free in my head for a year and a half or 4 years or whatever, or 10 years or 30 years. I don't know. But just during this election and stuff, you really got a lot of Philly on the news, which we don't normally get. And
yeah, we were one of those hanging chads, if you will.
Yeah. Those hanging nads, the hemorrhoid cluster. But yeah, Philly, a few cities that I'm close with, that all the major five things that were the big controversial subjects of that election were cities that I have a love for. But Philly, and when I perform there, when you perform there, isn't it just like, it just feels different, right?
Yeah, I was just talking to another comic about this and how it is. I mean, you know, we're from there. It's a different vibe, but you got to win them over. But when you win them over, it's even more of appreciation. And it's just a different vibe.
I was playing the Tower Theater once, and
literally where this movie takes place. Like, that's like my hood.
The Tower Theater
is one of, by Todd Rundgren's old house.
Yep. By Springsteen recorded there. David Bowie recorded there. I mean, it's insane. So I'm playing there, and it's a lot of people, and they're really stoned. And some guy yells, "This is the same stuff from your last special." And it was like 2 months after my last special came out. And so I had like 10 new minutes, 15. I was trying to come up with stuff, but you can't really come up and riff at a hard gig, you know, at a hard ticket that people are spending a lot of money. And I just said, "I'm really sorry, man. I mean, just, you can get your money back or get more pot. I'm really sorry. I'm doing everything I can here. I got a lot of new stuff, but I just did my special. It doesn't work that way. You know, I can't just write. It takes 3 years for me to come back with one."
And what did he say after that?
He stayed. He didn't say a word. Normally, they go fucking nuts and yell at you and stuff, but Philly has changed. It's for the better.
Yeah, they've gotten more Zen, if that even makes sense. Like, have you been to Fishtown recently?
I was gonna do jokes, but none of them are appropriate.
Well,
you can't say it, you can't tell them anymore. It's all over. It's all, what are we gonna do?
Dude, done. I've done this call, since between this Zoom and the last Zoom, Dr. Seuss has been canceled.
That's accurate. Doctor, but I don't think he's canceled. I think all of his characters, except Cindy Lou Who and whatever his name, Who, it's got Who at the end. So that tells you they're questioning. I don't know what to tell you. I loved seeing the Schuylkill. I loved seeing the frat houses. I just like the movie. You're really good in it because you're a really good actor.
Thank you, buddy.
And I know you did a bunch of improv, because they do what they do with you when they have you. That's what's always been real about you, is you're always a guy able to just cut through stuff and be real, which is the first time I was exposed to your work was that way. Even as the hoodlum and as good as it gets, here you are working with, you know, all these people, major, major directors and stuff, because you always figured out, oh, that's where I want to be. And the size of the part, we'll see what that is. But you came out of the gate with some really amazing people you got to work with because you were good. And in this thing, you're outside the club, not letting people in. And I knew you were just riffing on them. You know, it was, I dare myself to find it in the script.
Thank you, buddy. That means a lot. And yeah, I mean, I was very spoiled, you know, like when I started getting on to work with, I say, like, not so much directors, more auteurs. I mean, guys that wrote the script and directed and knew the shots in their head and would put the music. I mean, James L. Brooks, like you said, you know, I did a lot of scenes in that movie, but I only ended up having one, which I'm more than fine with, but we try a lot of stuff. And so when you're on an $80 million movie and you're doing scenes with Jack Nicholson and he's like, try this, and Jack Nicholson tries it, you try it. You know, we're already in the try game. So I got to work with a lot of big stars that improvised, and I always loved it anyway. So yeah, when they rolled the camera in front of the club, I'm like, all right, I'm just, and there's a lot to take in with some of those people in that scene. So I just took it in and just started going off.
Yeah. And is it accurate that no matter what take Jack is doing, it's usable no matter what it is?
Oh, incredible. He's the superest natural. I mean, it's only natural. And I heard this about Scorsese. That's why I would love to try to get into one of those. But I heard like some of the best stuff from all of his movies is stuff that was improvised. Not saying that they don't have great scripts, but he encouraged that.
Yeah. Yeah, to make it real. And that's what De Niro mm-hmm. would do, the whole thing with him and Pesci walking around in Raging Bull. You know, I'm sure it's in the script, but I'm positive it got embellished.
Yeah. And because what are we doing? We're just playing.
But the thing I was going to say is the way you started, I mean, you were an extra, which I never knew.
Yeah. So like I was taking a local class in Philly, and then, long story short, one of my friend's moms was like a local actress. She was in the Jiffy Lube commercial with Bill Berge. You know, remember Bill Berge?
No.
He was the middle linebacker for the Eagles.
Got it.
He was the Jiffy Lube guy. And she was in the commercial, and I was like, oh my God, this is like Norma Desmond. Like, she was like huge. And then she was like, there's a movie shooting, you know, in Delaware, and I think if I bring you down, they, you know, maybe you can get on. And she brought me down, and then I met the AD, and they were like, you got this sweater vest? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, will you cut your hair? I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, can you be here at 5 a.m. tomorrow? I'm like, yeah. And like, you're hired. And then the movie was Dead Poets Society. And then like within 5 hours, I'm reaching for a baby carrot, and like Robin Williams is like in the hummus with a celery stick. I was like, it was bizarre. And that's like, I had wanted to get involved with the business, and I never knew anything about it. And then that was the first time I was on a set. Once I was on the set, I was like, I was done.
And that then was,
I moved to LA. I was 89. And then like 6 months later, I moved to LA because I had a friend that I knew out here who was telling me that you got to come out here because this is like the Mecca of extradom. And so I was going to be a professional extra. So I did some extra work, and then, you know, I didn't know what a headshot was. I didn't know what an agent was. And then you learn. And then I slowly, boom. And then doing a lot of odd jobs, I had people tell me, you know, you should try stand up. And I was always a fan, but I never knew where to start. And then.
How old were you at this point?
I was 19, and I bought a drama log, and I looked, and it said, just sign up. And so I went down to the Beverly Garland Hotel on Lancashire, and I signed up for my first open mic. And after that, I didn't do stand-up again for 6 months.
Well, the venue, you know, the medium is the message. I don't know why set at the Beverly Garland didn't go well.
I would do a set, and then I would end up having a bad set or a good set. And I, like, if I had a good set, I would try it again. If I had a bad set, I was scared. And then like in early 1991, I said, I'm going to commit to this. And so I went to a place called the LA Cabaret.
Yeah. I used to work there.
It was great. And they would have open mic from like 4 to 6. So you could sign up and then you could like sweep. So I started playing that 5 days a week, just as like, even if like three people, just
that
to
was,
understand.
That was Herman Bursky. That was Alan Bursky's father ran it.
Really? Okay.
If I remember correctly.
It was great. It was deep in Sherman Oaks.
Yeah.
And I thought that was, and then they had like the funniest person in the Valley contest. And I don't know about that, but just.
Did you win?
No, I couldn't. I didn't even place. There's a lot of funny people over the hill.
Oh my God. Are you kidding? In the Valley? Well, there are actually, what am I talking about? So then your first, what was it? Do you want to share what Robin was like for you? I had known him at the time because I was doing stand-up. I was lucky enough when I was 21, before you were, I think you were touching your wiener at six. I don't know what was going on at that time, but that's, you know, I was at the Comedy Store at 21 years old in 78. So Now you're an extra and you're standing next to Robin. Did he talk to you?
No, he was just very much like, I mean, I don't really do a good impression of him. I have to work on it, but I just kind of, it was just like, hummus, you know, like baby carrot, you know, but like, it was like seeing a god, you know, I was at Domino's Pizza, you know, I worked at Domino's Pizza and then Robin Williams was there next to me. I'm next to a literally, you know, a deity. So I was too freaked out, but it was, you know, he was very cool. I remember just him being on set, making people laugh. He would make people laugh and then he wouldn't be away. So he'd probably be getting ready for his scenes. But when he didn't, he was with those boys and he was always making them laugh and probably building that camaraderie. And I was just like that. And so I, you know, you knew him, he was a peer for you.
He was a lot of love. And well, I still always looked up to him always because he was Robin and, you know, a lot of love and an amazing person to be on stage with. If you're ever on stage with him, it's like, there's no way you're going to get, you know, the spotlight because he's either 2 feet in front of you or 2 feet behind you. You know, he upstages, he downstages, it's his nature and he's. It was beautiful. And that, when you say his name, I think that really hits people hard. People really get sad because it's like, we lost a major muse.
Yeah. I mean, he, you know, probably since I'm 6 years old, like when you were saying you were working with him, he came into my living room. I remember on Happy Days.
Yeah. You know? That was his start.
Yeah. And then
Mork. Yeah.
I mean, and then Popeye and all the movies and then, you know, and then like, what's crazy is I saw him, the Golden Globes. I was watching the Golden Globes in like 2003. And he was like, they were like, where'd you come in from? He was on the carpet. He's like, yeah, I came in from my crib in Malibu. Now, I don't know if he was quoting the movie, but like, I felt like, wait, did Robin Williams just throw, you know, we get a little love there. Like, so it's just a crazy.
It's possible. He was unbelievable take inner of information. So it could come from anywhere. He was like a shortwave radio that just picked up everything.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what, you know, that's what he would do. And then he would interpret it. So, I mean, it was, it's crazy, you know, and then when he passed, you know, it's obviously it's way too soon. And just people like, I remember I did some show and they were asking me, are comedians depressed? I'm like, are porn stars dry? I mean,
Some of them are. I think. I don't watch.
They
porn.
Are.
I only
they
watch. I only watch behind the scenes of porn. I never watch porn.
You watch the making of.
I have seen that, and it is not the glory hole festival you think it would be.
Kate, no, make Kate, sure we don't edit that out.
No, this is Bob Sackett's here for you. So sometimes I say, don't let your kids hear this one. I had Gilbert Gottfried on. He talked about birds pecking at his balls forever. So, you know,
that's a problem.
I'll put a slight disclaimer, but you can curse. You do whatever you want and then we'll figure out.
Oh, okay. I don't, you know, YouTube doesn't let you curse now as much. So I don't do it.
Oh, well, they don't stop a lot of people. I mean, you know, they got Bill Burr on there saying, speaking his mind and a lot of great.
Yeah, comments. No, it's true.
So let me go back here. So what your, how long did you extra for? Was it 6 months?
On and off for like a year, you know, but it's actually very hard. It's competitive because like they always say, you know, there's no room. There's a lot of room at the top because everybody's stuck at the bottom, you know, or there's a race to the middle. There's the top is that rare air, but there's no barrier to entry. So it's like you sign up with these agencies, you put yourself on avails. Do you have a Letterman's jacket? Do you have a medieval hat? I mean, it's like you had to, you know, do you have a delivery man's uniform? Do you have a wig? I mean, they literally like, you had to have your own like stuff to go all. And are you willing to drive to Cerritos?
There's a lot of people now that are very fortunate because when there's a casting call and they say, do you have any Confederate wardrobe? Like 10,000 people show up the next morning. I'm sorry, sir. That's Viking. Oh, wrong error.
Yeah. Wait, are they casting those in LA though? I think those are.
I think they're there. I think they come in, you know.
That's an OC. They cast them out of the OC office. Beyond Fullerton. That's so funny, the Viking. But you know, you do that. And I was doing that on and off for a year, but obviously I had to have a lot of other jobs. So I was working a lot of different shitty jobs.
Literally delivering pizza, right?
Worked at Domino's. I worked at Pizza Hut. I worked at 24 Hour Fitness. I did so much different stuff. But the cool thing was when I would work at these places, I would see somebody that I saw in House Party. I would see somebody I saw in Die Hard. I was like, what the? So it was like, you know, being in the world's greatest safari. You know what I mean? It was like, oh, shit. Like, this is actually plausible. And like celebrities live like normal people. And then I started learning about the business. And then stand up was the first kind of structured thing of like, because you can send out headshots and try to get an agent, but, you know, you're just flailing. But doing stand up and going and then getting that first laugh and then you. All that delusion that comes with it, just that one fellow open mic or that laughs at something at 1:15 in a coffee shop. And you're like, I'm supposed to do this. Yeah. And then like, but then you go to like the store and there's the OR and it's the sign up night and you're there with other comedians, but you know, the mecca with which it is. And then you're in the other room doing a set or, you know, or Sam Kinison just rolled in. It's like, wow, this is, you're in the right area. So that's how it started because you start learning about what the whole system is.
See, that's what's smart about you because so many people give up and they're so depressed and if I hadn't made it by my 30s, if I haven't made it by my 40s. So I know people that haven't made it by their 50s and it doesn't mean it's not your time yet. You can still do it. It's tenacity and you have that. If you wanted to be in a Scorsese movie, you could have your peeps reach out to Ellen Lewis, who casts his movies. Whoops, shouldn't have said her name. She's going to get mail. But but you're the kind of person that could reach out because that's how you did so much. That's why, like, you know, the X show was so successful because your balls were – the reason you could do – Jamie Kennedy experiment is because you came up the hardest way, which is the best way to come up, which is, you know, nobody handed anything to you. You just figured out how it all works. So there's no plateau they can knock you off of, you know?
Well, thanks, man. I try. It's like the Jamie Kennedy experiment was like an example of like just trying because like I was being funny in movies and working on stuff, which was great, but like being funny in a movie is different than being funny in a comedy club with your peers. There's being funny in a movie, being funny in a comedy club where you're the star and it's a weekend in, you know, Charlotte, and then being funny in a 15-minute set in the OR with all a bunch of other headliners. And so that training that I had, I knew that there was more in me, and that's kind of why I wanted to do the experiment, because I felt like I got to show this other side. And you know, sometimes when I take chances, it really works, and then sometimes it doesn't. You know.
No, I hear you. Try. I mean, you know, we all do that, and everybody, no matter how what level they're at in success, they have someone that's a hit or miss. You know, and you still put 1,000% of yourself in it.
That's what I think. I think that, like, you know, we live in this culture, you know, as you know, it's so hypercritical now.
Oh, yeah.
Where, I mean, you can't even just go into, you know, an Al's Delicatessen in Ventura and order a bagel, and they're going to review how you ordered it. You
know? TikTok, I mean, my worst celebrities, you know.
They have that?
Yeah, yeah. But wait, servers come on, and some of them are very nice because they go, this person's wonderful. And then they go, this person was a bitch. And I'm like.
But I'm like, okay, that there are cases. Everyone can be a bitch. But sometimes people can have diarrhea. You know, sometimes people had a bad burrito, or who knows? You know what I mean?
But we just live to a server once, but it's because my mom passed away. It was like, and it was at her Shiva, which is awake people. Shiva means deli. And no, it doesn't.
No, it does. I said Shiva. I was like, sit right.
Yeah. But you're nice to everybody, and that's what I try to be. I don't try to be. I did try to be. Now it's my nature.
You said something to me. I don't know if you remember this. We met, like, I don't know, like 4 years ago. We were out some rooftop bar.
Not 4 years ago. How long ago?
Maybe four or five.
No, we met. Maybe, you mean when we met?
Maybe three. No, I'm saying I ran into you. We were like, oh, we got to reconnect. We got to do stuff. And you were some rooftop bar. And I was having a meeting. It was on Wilshire. And you were saying how, you know, we were talking about the niceness and how you're always having to be so nice. And you, I mean, I hope I could say this, but you were like, yeah, I'm sick of being the doting Jew.
Yeah.
Do you remember telling me that?
Yeah,
and I saw a change in you. You were like, I don't have to bend over backwards because you're never rude to anybody.
I just am myself. But I'm not hesitant for people to come over. And I introduce myself to people when I meet them. That's who I am, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know people that don't. I do know people that don't, but you know, it all is what it is, and it'll always be like this because people will rise to the top in pop culture as long as humanity hasn't destroyed itself or a giant glacier goes through Warner Brothers.
Why is that one? I'm trying to think of this, the latitude, longitude, because that's the first studio to get hit with the glacier.
Well, it melts. So it comes down from the mountains that are on the way to Pasadena and Glendale. And it just starts sliding. You know, it comes from snow. And then it just slides and cuts through the hottest place and melts the fastest. So then there's a tsunami.
Well, I thought the tsunami takes out Sony because that's closest to Santa Monica.
Oh yeah,
that'll be TikTok.
That's the coast. Overland is the coast.
And now we got this is your new studio. This is it. This is what we have.
This is our studio, zooming our asses up. So you got to tell me, what was your first speaking thing when you got a part and what that felt like? Because there's a lot of people listening. A lot of people want to do acting for a living. A lot of people want to do stand up. I think a lot of people just want to be famous, which it ends to nothing. It ends up in nothing usually, but sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes if you're a good influencer, that's different. You know, you can actually make a career and be valid, you know, rather than people going, oh, you and your YouTube. Yeah, really? Okay. Well, they made a career out of it, you know?
Well, I mean, you could make a career out of just wearing the right pair of yoga pants now.
Yep.
And I support that career.
I wear them backwards because I want the label front and center. So what happened? What happened that took you from Extraville? You're probably doing stand up a little bit, and then you all of a sudden went in. And what was that part?
So I had been gone for like 3 years, from like 91 to 94, hardcore LA scene. And that was you know, I like the coffee, tea, and me. I don't know. It was in Burbank, was a great open mic. The Pedersen's, just all these different coffee houses before Starbucks and LA Cabaret. And I was just going that. And then once in a while, I would pop in to do the OR. And the first club I really got passed in was the Factory. And so I slowly would get, you know, 3 minute spots at the end of the night. And that so was
Jamie
like,
Masato was kind of one of the champions of you, who's a very nice guy.
Yes. He was one of the first people he saw. Like, I waited all those Tuesdays. I did my time, and I did a lot of that. I waited a lot. And he's like, I never seen anybody wait like you. You wait. You know, like I didn't put people in line. I waited. And I'll work on that impression. And
no, it's a hello, buddy. My horrible joke about him, and it hurts his feelings, so I wanted to say that before I say it, is that I always accused him of being a sleeper cell.
God, Jesus, can you do that?
that he came here. But the truth is, he's an amazing guy. He's an Iranian Jew.
The best.
An Iranian Jew came here to try to, and he worked also, same kind of tenacity. Wouldn't be stopped, worked for Mitzi at the store.
Yes.
I've known him forever since yes. I came to LA. Was always kind to me. And
he
does a lot of good things for the homeless. He does a lot of things for the community, and he does it with the goodness in his heart. And everybody, you know, it's a club owner, so everybody has pros and cons of everybody. But
he's amazing, and he started me. I mean, he was like, so I started getting those little spots, and you know, it was a different time then where like you wouldn't see every headliner on all the shows. Like we had like New Faces night. So long story short, as I got, it's funny, I started as kind of a stand-up, but got more of my acting, known for my acting, but it came from the stand-up world. And I got a commercial agent, and then I started getting like a little commercial. It took me a while.
Was that from being at the Laugh Factory? People had seen you there, or is that
they saw me there, and people would come up to me. This is like before what the world is now, and you will understand it, where I had a SkyTel pager. And
I had one.
Yeah. And I had a call in, you get that, and then you'd call in. And so, but there's also like where you would be, and the Factory would take messages for you. So they'd be like, yo, somebody called for you last night, and they said they're an agent over at, you know, Morrison and Sons, and they want to meet you. They liked your set. And I'm like, who are they? Like, I don't know, call them. And like, you would get a number. So like, I remember getting a number for like a casting director out of the Factory. I remember someone leaving their card. There was no way to connect people. It was like, you had to rely on the booth girl who like, and you didn't know it was happening. So
right.
I had done that. And, little things started coming out of that, like meetings and auditions. And one of my first parts, I got a local commercial, which was El Pollo Loco commercial.
That's a good one.
Yeah. And that was, it was, came out of another comedian that worked at an ad agency. And she's like, yo, they're looking for a guy to like do a test tape to see what the commercial was. And so that was like, gave me tape. And then one of the first, you're going to love this one, is one of my first roles was, I was dating a girl and she was great. Her name is Jenica Berger. She's like one of my first loves. And she was really starting to get known. And she was really sweet to me. And she would got cast on a show, and she recommended me to the casting director.
Wow.
And I want to say it was Tammy Billick. And Tammy had cast a lot of different shows. So she was, it was a spin off. It was a pilot called How High. And it was made by, you know, one of the greatest guys in the business, God rest his soul, Ron Levin. You know Ron?
Yeah, I did.
Yes. So Ron was like, again, like you do all this hard work and you know, it doesn't work here, but then things pay off. And then
If people don't know that either, you think,
So it's like,
oh, I didn't get this part, and you don't realize
a lot of stuff led up to it. And so Ron created Married Children, as you know, and so the WB was like, we want you to create your own version of that. So I did a pilot. I met him, and I auditioned for him, and I got a part on this pilot, and a tiny little like student role, and Jessica Hahn, who he was dating at the time, was on the show. You know Jessica. and I would just make, like, I was so scared, Bob, but I was just on character the whole time. I mean, my character's name was Stony. So I guess, you know, he was, you know, literal. So I would like, hey, what's up, Ron? Hey, what's up, Jeff? You know, like, I'd walk, be kind of in character all day. And Jessica's like, this guy's hilarious. And Ron's like, is he always fucking Stone? Like, he's fucking great. Like, this is so. Long story short, as a pilot didn't go, but then they brought me back in and I started doing a couple episodes of a kind of similar character on a show called Unhappily Ever After.
Yeah, I remember it well.
Yeah, you remember that? And Bobcat was on the show along with Kevin.
Oh, I know
Connelly.
The whole thing. Yeah, Kevin.
You
Connelly.
Know? Okay, so yeah.
I know
so,
the
but,
whole
but
thing.
But Jessica, so there you go. So you really seem like you know. I got to hear your story. But Jessica Hahn and Ron Levitt, like, Ron Levitt was the kind of guy you could go in, you could audition, make him laugh in the room. All right, I'll see you tomorrow. Like, and then Jessica Hahn would be like, Ron, he's funny. Give him another line. And there's just that type of beautifulness. And so that led to a lot. That show led to the casting director then brought me in for Ellen. And then I got Ellen. And then that led. So I really started to help just by like one job, really, as they say, when one person wants you, everybody does.
And so how many, I mean, I looked on your IMDb and I don't know what to believe anymore. It's like 90 movies you're on there. It says 90 movies. Have you been 90? In, it says 90. Have you been in 90 movies?
Who has the time?
some people, I mean, if you're starting and you're doing, you know, smaller parts, you could do 5 in a year, you know?
I definitely was at like, probably it's funny because one of my longest movies would take a lot longer. Now, obviously Marvel movies still take a long time, but you know, a movie would take 4 months. And so even if you're on it and you have a little part, they do what they call run a picture. So they buy you and you kind of have to be on available for 4 months. So you maybe do one or two of those a year, but in the last 8 years, the way it is, and movies have, the budgets are either huge or lower.
Right.
You can do some. So I've definitely done more movies in the last 8 years. I mean, some you know and some you don't, but because it's just easier to make product. You know, you can do them in 3 weeks.
You know, we're
gonna 90.
It said 90, but I mean
probably 89.
And what about Ad Astra, the Brad Pitt movie?
Oh man, that was a great experience.
I mean, I read interviews about you and the director and.
Oh, I love him. So he's what I call one of our, you know, he's one of our last auteurs. I mean, he's a guy, you know, James Gray is, he wrote the script, he directed it, he produced it, he knows exactly what he wants. And, you know, like, you know how the business is, Bob, you've been in it longer than me. It used to be, you literally would go out to lunch. Like when I got the Jamie Kennedy experiment, I sat with the president of the WB. We were at Keto Moss. He's like, dude, you're funny. We literally napkined it.
Was it Jordan?
Yeah, it was Jordan.
Jordan Levine.
And Jordan's like, I really like that. Let's figure out a deal. But like, literally, that's not a joke. Like you could talk over like gentlemen and figure it out. And it was loose. And then the business has gotten so strict now of like self-tape, where are you from, what's your high, all this stuff of like so many decision makers. But with James, I went in and it was just like sitting with a guy that was the head of like an $80 million movie with, you know, Brad Pitt, one of our last Mount Rushmore stars. And I auditioned and then he was like, try it this way and try it that way. And then I went out in the room and then we tried it. It came back and he's like, you could just sense it was play. You know, I had a lot of time to play and try. Like I felt free as opposed to if I miss a line, oh, is he have memory problems or
Right.
So I got the movie and it was awesome. And I got to work with Brad and I worked a week on it. And, you know, we had scenes that were scripted and then we improvised a lot. And then at the end of the day, it didn't make it in, which I was so bummed because
it's a really good movie. I really loved it. And
yeah,
and he is one of the more special people in the business. He is, it ain't a joke. You know, he's not just,
who, Brad or James?
Yeah,
or
both? Well, both.
Brad,
but Brad's got the 19 pack, you know.
Yeah, he is as sweet as they come. I mean, yeah. he is giving, he is open. He is like one lets you try stuff. I mean,
he's appreciative. Incredible. He's appreciative.
Yeah.
Of where he's at. It's one of those. It's a wonderful air to be in. Well, what I want to do is take a quick break because we haven't even scratched the surface on my experience with the Jamie Kennedy experiment or our experience on blowing up the MTV show. We have a bunch to discuss. I hope you don't have plans to watch Nightline. So we'll be right back. All right, so we're back. And those were good commercials. Those are my favorites.
No, incredible.
I actually only have good sponsors, to be honest. Do you have sponsors on your podcast?
No, I don't even know how you get them.
You'll find out.
I got to work the numbers. I got to get my bigger first.
Yeah, it'll happen. That's what happens. Then you get the sponsors and then all that crap. And what's the name of your podcast, Jamie?
Hate to Break It to You. It's on iTunes and Spotify and YouTube.
And probably wherever you get your podcast, most likely.
Yeah, wherever you get podcasts, but
right,
those are the main places.
And then what I wanted to, I have a lot to talk to you about, but what about two things, a movie, but also you have the Can I Say That tour. Now, there was a special, Can I Say That? You were getting ready to shoot it. What I couldn't get all the deets on it. I was trying to find it. What's up?
Here's what happened. I had Can I Say That? And I shot about 2 hours of it. And, you know, you shoot multiple shoots. And then I realized I had about 2 hours of material. So I cut it down to an hour. And then I used it. It's going to be like two. So the first one was Stupid Smart. And that was my latest special. And that came out in May.
Right.
And Can I Say That will probably come out when I can shoot. That was more of like Stupid Smart was like I tell people, it's like me, half of it's like me that, you know, and then I slowly merge into like deeper topics and things that are like, oh, I start thinking about stuff. And then Can I Say That will be more of really of what's going on and all the stuff that we're basically, you know, dealing with and how we're don't know if the word just kidding will be obsolete in a year.
Right. And a lot of times people say just kidding when they weren't kidding. It's their fake mm-hmm. excuse to get out of some of the shitty that they said.
Yeah.
Just you're really ugly. Oh, just kidding.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a terrible qualifier.
No, we're not in an up with people world and it's our job to try to put that out there. And that's what you do too.
Yeah. I mean, like I was thinking about that. Like I was like thinking about this and you can tell me more. I mean, why are things being the way they are? Like why is canceling such a thing? It's now it's becoming erasing. And listen, do we have to get better as a society and a species? Of course.
Yeah.
But I believe this is that this was always happening. We were never exposed to it. If you were to
Correct.
Sit in the main room in 1978 and everybody could see what you saw, the same amount of people would have been offended. It's just that we grew up in our own bubble.
Yeah.
And when I saw you in HBO, I'm attracted to you and I'm attracted to Kinison and I'm attracted to Rodney. And so I sought out that stuff more. And I'm like, oh, it spoke to me in a voice that I loved. And so the people now that are seeing stuff, because you can see anything everywhere, a lot of people are seeing stuff that they just don't get. It just shows you how many unfunny people there are in the world who don't really get the joke.
No, and they really just want, how do I say this? They want something to be just celebrity driven, or a person that just thinks so much of themselves. And there's really no, there's sometimes concepts behind it, but I'm being a critic and I shouldn't be, but that's what everybody's become. But I just aspire to be as good as I can be. I'd like to be great. I mean, but I look at people that are, or studied them. I mean, I watching Richard Pryor, watching Dave Chappelle, watching Chris Rock, watching Jerry, watching, you know, Bill Burr, you know, these people that I know inspire me. Well, Richard is a different, you know, that's just another huge loss, but you've got a joy in you, and that's what I was attracted to in you. So it's like, I always look at comics like we're 9 years old, you know, or 12 or 16, depending on where you're locked in. And we just started playing the minute we met each other.
Mm-hmm. That's what I think comedy is. It's like, I think I'm about 15, you know, I've never really went past that. And I'm just, you know, when we got you to do my show, you know, you did such a huge thing for me. You blessed me and you co-signed me, and you didn't know what that was that you were about to do.
But I watched your show and I knew you were special, because you can tell. You can tell in 3 minutes. That's what you were looking at when you were a kid. And kids can tell in a minute. They watch something, they go, oh, that, I like where that person's coming from, or they make me laugh, or they're affecting me. But I think that was our first time knowing each other, is you invited me to be on Jamie Kennedy Experiment, right? We know how Jamie Kennedy Experiment came about, because Jordan Levin said, I want to do this. And then how did you hook up with Facts and Adam? And
so I hooked up with Facts and Adam. We had multiple showrunners that we were talking to and meeting with. And then eventually it was like the deal was going to go run out. And Jordan Levin was just this guy who really believed in the show. And he was the president of the network, along with Suzanne Daniels. And he was a big comedy fan, and they were really sweet to me. And he was the guy who was like, I want you to meet these guys. I want you to meet Facts and Adam. And they created Mad TV. And I remember auditioning, and I was like, I love those guys. And then they had written on In Living Color. And so I was like, we could really vibe here. And then our first meeting, I just started doing characters, and they just started laughing, and they would just write a better line than I would say. And so it was really on from there, you know? And so first lot of episodes were like characters, and then, you know, other ones were these big concepts. And we had another amazing head writer, Brian Hart, and just had a great staff. And so we would sit, and like, it was new to me. So we would just sit around a big table, and we're like, Lord, what do we want to do? You know, like, I'd have my passionate ideas, you know, pitch stuff, and then they would have their own. And we literally look out the window, and I think it was Adam, and he's like, these tour buses, look at these tour buses. And I'm like, yeah, they're everywhere. And TMZ tours were starting to get big. And he's like, I mean, Jesus, they're so invasive. He's like, but what do? Do they really give you the tour? And he started riffing. And he's like, well, why don't they take you inside the person's house? And then someone else is like, what if that person came home? And so basically that's how it was born. And like, and I, once you flip the script on people, you had flipped the script like 3 times. And what I mean is 4 times, if I can go meta here. I knew you as Bob Saget. I knew you as the HBO comedian. America really knew you as Danny Tanner. But it's so funny that a teenager knew you, your real voice, before America, right? So then you flipped the script again, I would say, in Half Baked. That was the first time I think America saw a different script, right? Then you flipped it again in Entourage. But between that, you did my show. And so we did that, and we're like, we got to do it. So we thought, you know, we thought of like, whose house can we go to? And we thought of you, because of how your persona is one way and you're another. So the whole bit was, let's go on a tour of a celebrity's house. And what happens when that celebrity comes home, you know, and all the shit that you had, and you just had a lot of weird shit.
It was so well done, you guys. I mean, there were
one of our Mount Rushmore bits.
People talk to me about that today. People say that's one of the funniest things they ever saw because, you know, it's on the YouTube. You just look up Jenny Kennedy.
Jenny Kennedy. You know Jenny?
John F.
We're
Kennedy.
Having a Wi-Fi problem again.
Teddy Kennedy experiment.
That experiment didn't end too well, too.
No, it's not a good Jesus thing.
Jesus Christ.
But what you did was, it was so funny what they did. I didn't want it to be at my house, obviously. So you rented the house they used for the movie Cocoon. It was also the outside of Ozzie and Harriet's house from the 50s TV.
It was also Vinny Chase's house in Entourage.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a legendary mansion.
And
so we rented it because you were having this baller mansion, which I'm sure you do.
I do all right, as you can tell from my background. Mm-hmm. But I got wood.
You got a lot of wood.
And a shitty painting.
I thought you had that commissioned.
Yeah, I did by a wonderful blind artist who paints with his feet. But what was amazing is you did it the way, and this is before punk, is that correct?
Yeah, it was before punk. We did that, and then punk kind of did their own version. It was more like just celebrity joking on celebrities, which was a good formula too.
Right.
But we did it, and we took the tour, and then all the people in the tour were the mark. And then, you know, my whole thing was, well, guys, Bob's here. And I'm like, hide. And then that was like the big moment. And then,
well, the funny thing is you take the people around the side of the house and you break the window to get in. No, yeah. I'll just go over here. There's no key. He usually leaves me the key or something like that.
Yeah, it was the only tour company that gave you tours inside the home and people believed it. And then I'd break a window and like, is this cool? I'm like, oh, yeah.
Well,
and then I would go to the refrigerator. Oh, yeah. But you had like a pig's head in there.
I asked for that. That was a request. Yeah. They asked me, what do you want in your house? And I said, pictures of Stamos upstairs, a condom dispenser, a stuffed dog.
Wait, your pig's head was you?
Yeah, yeah.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
And everything I pitched, they took shots of and put it in. And then they would cut to the people's responses, which were horrific. They were horrified of what this my home was like. It was like American Psycho.
But now you probably find that in celebrities' homes that's been exposed.
We read about it all the time.
Soon that episode's going to be a documentary.
Zillow's going to go into production. Homes that have pervy stuff in them.
Yeah, I mean, that to me is one of our, that's just one of my greatest things I've ever been involved with comedically.
I was proud to be in it. And you guys, again, it was collaborative and it was a fun sketch that at that time viral was new and it really traveled. But the thing is, was it about half the people on the bus were actors that were part of it? And then the other half were actual real tour people. So they lured them along. What was the proportion of real to not real to actual, you know, actors?
It's usually half and half. So what we do is we get people that want to be in this prank to sell the prank and they bring their friend along. And so the friend is really clueless, but it's a trusting a real friend. And so the friend's like, hey, you want to go on a tour? And then the person ends up like going along with the prank. So then it really sells the prank to the real person who's like, ooh. And we always put the X on the person who we're getting. And it just, and we did research about like what the people they were bringing in. And so how we could trigger them and such.
That's really intense and incredibly produced and really expensive when you know, shows like that are would be a sketch show or a clip show. And most of them don't have that. You had to rent that house. You had to rent the tour bus. You had to get all those actors. It was a huge amount of work, that production.
What it was, and one of the things I'm really proud of is, if people don't realize it, I mean, people just think pranks are easy, and why I think the show will stand the test of time and is gathering a momentum because of online is that we really produced it. We really went in. We got to know who we were pranking. We wrote an outline of beats we wanted to hit, but yet then I always had a character, and then there was always me that was going to go off in improv, and we hired good actors that could improv with me. And then people like you who are also going to improv and be funny, but then lend credibility. So we really went, I mean, to do it right. And we had a whole team, and then we would prank people and they'd be like, what's that mean? And like, we had this beautiful girl, Lori. I mean, we were the OGs of it. And they had like $100 gift certificate to like Tony Roma's, and like, just sign here, and a headshot with Jamie. And people were like, that's why we kind of got sued, you know? And we weren't doing anything bad, but like Gloria Allred, the great Gloria, went out for all the hidden camera shows. She called it Gotcha TV. I don't know if you remember that. In 2003. And I was Punk'd, Tracy Morgan's show, Scare Tactics, a bunch of us got sued because they said people are in a traumatic state after they have a prank and they're signing away their life before they know. And it's kind of true, but kind of not. But we didn't. You're on TV. Everybody wanted to be on TV.
Well, not. It's interesting because we don't see as much of it anymore. Usually it's self-produced by people.
Yeah, it's like YouTube. I mean, can you even do it? We were really litigious. We had a lawyer on set of how close we could get to the mark. You can't touch the mark. It's a two-party signature state, meaning you have to have a camera, but they have to, you can film somebody, but they have to sign off that you film them. So if you have a hidden camera, it's a lot of, and now, dude, it's 20 years later. I mean, you can't even fart on somebody at Kinko's by accident. And you know, that's a lawsuit.
I have to do that. And if I'm in Kinko's, I'm going to be farting. Now you can't. Has there been talk of trying to do it again, even with all the legal stuff?
There is definitely, I mean, the reboots of the reboots of the reboots.
Hey.
I mean, dude, things get canceled 6 months ago and they're like, let's reboot it. I mean, it's like,
right.
So you're actively still shooting your show, but yours is not.
Fuller House is gone.
You did what, 3 seasons?
We did 6 on Netflix.
Wow. Okay.
But John, Dave, Lori, and I were just, they called us the legacy cast. It was like they opened us up on the alien ship and Sigourney Weaver opened the chamber and they would bring us out and we would do an episode and then put us back in. And then 4 weeks later, we'd come back.
She'd pop in, pop out. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But did you do 10 episode seasons or 20?
No, it wasn't 20. There were 13. There were 10. I'm trying to remember. It definitely wasn't 20 though.
All right. So you did 6 seasons at like, you know, like I'm just thinking of how we used to do it. We would do 24 a year.
Yeah.
You know? So it was like, so you did, but you did like a lot of episodes.
And I had a show on the WB called Raising Dad and that got 24 episodes and that show should have lasted. And because the cast was Jerry Adler, who was Hesh on The Sopranos, was my dad. Jonathan Katz produced, wrote the show about his own life. Norman Steinberg was a writer who wrote on My Favorite Year. He wrote My Favorite Year and Blazing Saddles. And my daughters were Brie Larson and Kat Dennings.
I remember that.
And Megan Good was on the show. It was a great.
Yes.
And Andy Kindler was my principal. I was a teacher. I would have done that show for years, but that would maybe have kept, Brie Larson from being one of the biggest stars in the world. And Kat Dennings.
Wait, so I remember Kat was your daughter. I didn't remember Brie was.
Yeah, she was the younger, sweet one, lovely girl.
And lovely. You know what? I swear I remember now because I would see your cast at Upfronts when I was doing my show. And that's also where we started talking about doing my experiment, you know, you coming on. But I remember that you were raised, you were on that show. And you know what's just making me think why I said I remember that is because I remember Jerry and I remember Kat. I don't remember the Bree, but Bree was also a student of mine on Ghost Whisperer.
Holy crap.
She had like a guest spot or two. Yeah, it's like it's just so, you know, I mean, and it's awesome to see people just, you know, go to the heights that they do.
Yeah, she's a miracle. You know, she's just super talented. Now, I'm told that you're on a tight press schedule because of your movie Last Call, but I haven't talked. I have to. Let's just take one more break and then do a few minute wrap up. Let's do that.
Okay. All right. I guess they do. They do have me a lot of stuff today.
Yeah, because you got a movie. Last Call's out on Friday. So yeah, we'll be right back. So we're back, Jamie, and things we need to discuss. We'll talk more about it on your podcast. But things I wanted to mention is your MTV show Blowing Up was 9 episodes, right?
8.
Nope. Should have been 9. Should have been longer. And it was really, really good. And I got lucky because you wanted me to do something in it. And the whole you and Stu Stone's purpose was to make a music video with me in it.
Mm-hmm. We had so much fun, and we on the first one, we decided why not, you know, reach into the well again. So we wanted to show, you know, how it was like rolling with you, and you know, that's a music video, and it's, you know, it's a joke, but is it? I mean, dude, I've had some nights with you where it's 2 o'clock and you knock on the door, we're still getting in. You know, we're still getting the stick.
And they locked us in there. Yeah, they would.
I remember a certain place in La Cienega that took very good care of us.
Yeah, we were rolling, and that was before I did this. That's before, yeah. And that's how you came up with the idea.
Up with the idea because it was literally like, "Yo, it's 2 o'clock," and you know, can I tell the story? And you're all like, you knock on a door, and they're like, "We're closed." And you go, "Sag it," and they're like, and literally, guy opens the door, bam, and the next thing you know, it's a whole new world.
I was single.
Yeah. Hey, nothing bad happened.
No,
having some Wagyu beef burgers and
yeah, actually, nothing bad did happen. It's pretty disappointing.
You were single, hanging out with a couple of your friends. That's all us.
Just eating a steak and having tequila and martinis before I went to bed.
Nothing wrong with it. It helps you sleep.
Nobody got hurt. But I just wanted to say, so you had the concept for a song, Rolling with Saget, which was, from what I'm told, the music video cost $500,000, from what I'm told. And it was Dave Dean directed it. Mariah Carey, famous music video director. And we just shot, and then we ran out of money and we had to stop. But it was so much fun to shoot. You went on the street. And how did George Lucas wind up in it?
George Lucas wound up in it because he's a real Hollywood guy and a normal guy. Like, he's an Americana guy. And so now Musso and Franks is famous because once in a time in Hollywood, but I love Musso and Franks. You know Musso and Franks.
It was I love it.
The OG spot on Hollywood Boulevard, like one of the last classy spots.
It's like kind of is still kind of.
No, it still is, but I mean, it's like, it's still, when you walk in there, it's the last, like, timeless, wonderful place in service. So I guess he would go there, like, every Wednesday or Thursday to meet his daughter for having lunch. And so he went there, and we were shooting in the parking lot next door at Musso & Franks, and we were shooting with, like, the red cams, and it was, like, a total new type of technology in, like, 06. And he was just on the set, like, just... You know, hey, what's your aperture here? You know, what's that? It goes digitally right away. And he was talking to some like camera guy, and camera guy's looking at him kind of funny. And I don't you remember this? And somebody
I
goes,
remember it totally.
Somebody goes, hey, what's Michael McDonald doing here? and then somebody's like, and Stu's like, that's not McDonald, that's not a Doobie, that's Lucas. And then I'm like, from the movie Lucas, they're like, no, George Lucas. And I look over. But he does look like Michael McDonald. And I told Stu's like, Bob, that's George Lucas. And you're like, what? And don't you remember what you said? You look over and you go, hey, Lucas, get off my, this is a closed set.
The say? Only reason I was able to do that is because
that was your opener.
Well, I do that sometimes, but the only reason that worked was he said, Bob, my daughter wants to meet you. And I went over and I met his daughter and she was so sweet. And then you said, hey, George, want to be in the music video? And he's in it.
I know.
He says, I'm rolling with Saget.
Dude, he wanted to meet you. You wanted to meet him. And it was awesome. And he wanted to like look at the cameras. So then Stu, you know how pushy he is. He's like, get him to be in the video. So the next thing, and I'm like, George, hey, you want to be in this video? And he's like, well, what do I got to do? And so then we put him at the bar. You put some dancers around him and he reveals.
And 10 years later, he shoots 3 Star Wars movies on digital. And changes the whole form.
So do you think that we started it?
That's what I wanted to say. And I think you should get a piece of all those movies. I think it was
you, me, and then Tara Reid came in. So it was you, me, and Tara.
No, it was Tara Reid lookalike, I think.
Oh, okay. It was a lookalike.
Yeah. Oh, no, we had a, we had a Paris Hilton lookalike.
Yeah, Paris would look like Tara was real.
And Stamos was in it. Stamos did me a solid.
Real Stamos. He did you a solid. And Terry Crews was in it.
I got to
put it up again.
I definitely think you should. But look, we have so much to talk about. So we're going to have to continue on your podcast because you're on a press tour for your movie, I do recommend. It's Last Call, March 19th, Friday, this Friday. And you're going to get on tour again. You're going to have, can I say that, when we're able to get out there. And I don't think it's that far off. I think this year you'll be out playing. And if you're not acting in a movie or doing both, people have to go see you because we're all going to be out there trying to bring people back and make them have a collective entertainment experience. But
yeah,
I just love you, Jamie.
Buddy, I love you too, man. I miss you, man. It's so nice to catch up with you.
We are going to, when the world's back, I don't think I'll knock on the door at 2 a.m, but if you want to, I got a couple spots once they're open. They haven't closed yet. It's real sad. So we got to help people come back by keeping the place open till 5 a.m. with the door locked.
Yeah. They say the 20s are going to be like the roaring 20s. What's wrong with a couple of grown men doing the Charleston after 2 a.m.? There's nothing wrong with that.
Man, the roaring 20s, nothing bad happened during them.
Just a little pick-me-up. Coca-Cola original formula. Anyone? Is this on?
I love you. Congrats on the movie and congrats on all the stuff that's coming out. And it's going to be a really good decade for you once we're allowed to get the hell out of here.
The 20s. Oh, that started off with a bang, didn't it?
Oh, it was really good. It's really good. Oh, I'm sorry. We made the vaccine, but we forgot to figure out how to give it to anyone. Everything's going to be fine. You know, it's just a horrific time. And I say we're failing upward. That's what I say.
Yeah. I think we'll look back at this and we'll be like, we got through it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. But liquor sales will still go up. And so will good rehab meetings. So
sure. Barbiturates probably.
Yep. And be well, just be well. And I don't know when you're traveling. Are you traveling?
No, I barely go to Gelson's. But I go. People don't stand on their circle.
No.
And in between the circle. Get on your fucking circle, dude.
I my wife gets it delivered because I don't want to get it. You know, I'm older than you. I'm going to get that. I got one dose of the vaccine and they injected it into my penis. So I can't wait.
Has your penis aerated?
Yeah.
It opens up.
It does. It looks like a big old sponge. It looks like a sea sponge. It looks like a sea anemone. It looks like
the perfect way to end the podcast.
Sponsored by sea cucumbers. Well, you go on your press junket and then hit me up and I'll be on your podcast. I can't wait.
I love that, buddy. Miss you, buddy. I love
miss
you.
Miss you too. I love you. And we'll see each other in a few months. We're going to be seeing each other.
We're going to see each other. Swear. It's going to happen.
It's happening.
Face to face.
Face to face, and fun shit will ensue.
Yes. All right, buddy. Take
love
care.
Love you, Jamie. You too.
All right, love you, buddy.
Love you, man. Bye. All right, Jamie Kennedy. Now, see, we haven't talked to each other in a while, but I love him. And we go back, and that explains how. And you'll hear a continuation of it to take you more up to the present when I do his podcast, which will be soon. And his movie is Last Call, March 19th, which is Friday. So there you go. And you know what you do. Rate, review, subscribe, follow this podcast. Tell people about it. And it's on the YouTube page. So go to that. That is YouTube.com/Bob Saget. Because I got like no followers on there. And because, you know, it ain't TV. It's a split screen. But it's put together really well by Kate Anderson, one of the producers and editor, and she's just really talented. Andrew Seeley and Stephen Perlstein. So that's who puts this together at Studio 71. I never give them a shout out. So please, thanks, guys. All the best, you guys. Stay well, and talk to you on the next episode of Bob Saget's here for you. Thanks a lot.